You can live a life with no limits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're in Chelek Beis, Perek Shvi. We're talking about the Hashpa'as HaPekovim. So we talked about yesterday, Emmanuel. Right. We talked about the Hashpa'at HaKokovim. The Hashpa'at HaKokovim. I mean, wait until you get into things a little bit before you start asking questions. Get into the flow. Hashpa'at HaKokovim. We discussed the machlokes in the Gemara and Shabbos Daf Kuf Mem Vav, whether it is Yesh Mazal Yisrael or Ein Mazal Yisrael, which is a mandiyamer in Masechet Shabbos that says that Kadosh Baruch Hu, hey Shkai, how you doing, Jerry? Kadosh Baruch Hu empowers the angels behind the heavenly bodies, the ones that they're in charge, they're entrusted with.
Is this some sort of like Kabbalah thing?
I know, it's borderline. It's not Kabbalah. We're not really qualified for Kabbalah. But Malachim is not Kabbalah. Angels are not Kabbalah. Angels are in the Torah. They're in the written Torah. And they're special angels. It's their job to make sure that the sun works, and their job to make sure that the moon works and the stars. And it's also their job to make sure that the forces of nature work. The forces of nature work in consonance with each other, and that the world runs in an orderly fashion according to the statutes, the laws Hashem sets down. It's called the Chukei HaTeva, the statutes of the laws of nature. So all of nature is under the Memshala, it's under the dominion of Malachim. And the Malachim wield their power through the sun and the moon and the stars. Which we can understand this on a very basic level, you know, that the moon has an effect on the tides of the world. You know, gravity is affected by the heavenly bodies, that's on a very basic level. And then there's other natures, that's a natural force. Gravity is a natural force. And there's other natures, there's a nature to be intelligent, the nature to be kind, the nature to get angry, the nature to be cruel, the nature to be fiery. These are also natures. And they also come, like a person has a fiery nature that comes from the sun. Because the angel, his task is entrusted with the task of the sun's influence to reach the world. So anything that's to do with warmth or heat or anger is under his domain. That's his task. And there, you know, there's different constellations, there's different stars. And those are the stars, those are the signs of the zodiac. And when a person enters the world, the gateway that a person enters the world is his birthday. So his moment of birth. So the natures of the person, the inborn natures of the person, are dictated or influenced by the constellations that are in ascendancy at the time of his birth. And this is true for Gentiles. The question is, does this apply to Jews as well? Or are Jews different? What? They're just still going over some points. Jews as well. So the Gemara Shabbos says the machlokes yesh mazal Yisrael, ein mazal Yisrael. There's a mandiyama that says that this applies only to Jews. I mean, it only applies to Gentiles. And Jewish people, their nature is dictated by Kadosh Baruch Hu directly. That there's a gzardin and shemayim on a Jewish person directly from Hashem. And it has nothing to do with angels or heavenly bodies or anything like that. And then there's another mandiyama that he holds. Yesh mazal Yisrael. So we talked about, we gave two examples, Avraham Avinu and Haman. Okay, that's what we talked about yesterday. And the Dustler explained that both points of view, Yesh Mazal Yisrael and Mazal Yisrael, they're both legitimate points of view. There's a basic difference between a Jew and a Gentile. A Gentile is stuck. A Gentile is locked in. If it's dictated and is, you know, based on his the circumstances surrounding his birth, that he is going to be intellectually challenged, and that's based on the configuration of the stars at the time that he's born, he will be intellectually challenged, and there is no way he could change that. With a lot of effort, he could do a lot with what he has, but he will always be intellectually challenged. That's his nature. Just like when a rock is dropped from a high place, it falls down, and a helium balloon falls up. If somebody chas v'shalom puts his finger in his fire and a fire get burnt, this guy is going to be intellectually challenged. A Jewish person is different. A Jewish person is born into nature. a Jewish person is born into the limitations of nature, but a Jewish person has the ability of rising above nature.
So a mentally,
right.
I don't want to say
challenge.
Kid that's Jewish, there's nothing he can do to become.
There's nothing that he cannot do, that's right. There is nothing that's beyond his ability to do. He could become the most brilliant person, and what it takes is for him to live his life supernaturally.
They function normally, but in their own way that we cannot comprehend. So I'm saying,
I assume you're talking about someone that he's not just limited, he's someone that he doesn't...
He's limited, but as a result of that, he's been limited physically.
Yeah, but children like that, like children that are in their own world, you have no idea what their intellectual capabilities are. You really don't. Children that suffer from severe autism, or they're severely retarded, so that we have no way of assessing their intelligence because they don't communicate with the outside world. Yes,
so
that's not what I'm referring. I'm not referring to that. I mean, in fact, there is evidence that their intelligence way surpasses, you know, right. So that's what you just said, that they already live in Shalamala Medarka Tava. They have this thing called facilitating. Have you ever heard of it? Facilitating. It's called facilitating. It's something which is pioneered here in Israel. They have children that they're... autistic children, they're called minutak. You know, they're totally cut off from communication, from one-on-one communication. They have no ability of going outside of themselves. Because communication means you go outside of yourself and you make a bond with someone else. And their children are born with this syndrome that they're not capable of doing so. So there's no idea what's going on inside of them. And they also have severely handicapped motor skills. Children with cerebral palsy and autism, they develop some kind of computer program that enables children that they have no control over their movements or speech, for that matter, to communicate. When it was originally done in order to enable someone who's severely handicapped to communicate, so the children of the study group they had no hand-eye coordination. They couldn't control their hand. There's a lot of spasms and jerks. So they would, the tester, or the administrator, or I guess you call him or her the facilitator, would hold the child's hand. They did this with children over a keyboard. And they would hold the hand steady. And that's the only intervention that was, you know, there was a lot. They couldn't influence the movement in any way. They just held the hand steady. And then the child would be asked a question, and the child's hand on its own would jerk towards, you know, a certain letter on the keyboard. And they found that these children were able to type full sentences. They knew how to, they knew how to formulate words already. Somehow or another, they had this ability, and they were able to formulate answers to questions that were put to them. And, you know, once they attained this level of success, they started putting questions to these children that people in this world wouldn't know. They wouldn't tell, right?
They
can't tell you. And they also said that the children were able to answer in any language. providing the one that was facilitating or administering the test knew that language. They knew things. They asked children the questions of Amunah. And this is called facilitation. So that's what you mean. You mean that these children are already living in the Malabar Tavern. What I'm referring to is someone that's just unintelligent.
A learning
disabled. Yeah, they have a challenge, learning disabled. He does communicate. He's a part of this world. He's limited. And if he's Jewish, so he was born with that. He was born like, he was always like that. It was nothing he did. He didn't do that by substance abuse or, you know, burning his brain. He was born with that. There was a Xardim based on the forces of nature. You know, ice cream is cold, a car's engine is hot, and he's unintelligent. It's an effect of nature. And a Jewish person is not confined to nature. That's a starting point. They start with in nature, but you can rise above it.
They are, and yet a kid who's mentally challenged, yet he's mentally all there in his own way.
Right.
But based on the way we function, he is different. Therefore, challenged.
No, but that's not the study, the example. Permit me to use my own example. what I'm, you know, the example that I'm using is a child that he really is unintelligent. On the inside as well as on the outside.
I'm saying, but even that kid...
He's limited.
I'm saying that kid, he can't break out of those barriers. So he, have you ever seen a mentally retarded kid?
I'm not talking about a mentally retarded child.
You're saying that is still Derek Teva?
I'm always going to be like
that.
Excuse me.
That's not what we're
excuse
talking
me.
About.
A mentally,
great, but you can still
a mentally retarded child, I'm not saying there's any limits in the first place. That's what I'm saying. A mentally retarded child, a child that's removed from our definition of what it is to live among mankind. So that he is that way because he is unlimited. He has no limitations. You don't know what's going on the inside. I'm using an example of someone that is limited. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you have someone that he doesn't connect. If you have someone that doesn't connect with this world, how do you know what's going on inside of his mind?
It's not always inside, also on the outside.
Someone like that has no outside.
That's my point. He's
totally inside.
Which means
he has no limitations.
I agree.
Okay, so that's not my that's not my example.
That's not your example. That is an example of Derech Teva, of what God has.
No, I would say it's not Derech Teva.
No,
Derech Teva is that a child is born and he learns how to speak and he learns how. That is not the Derech Teva. That is a
nature nurture issue.
No, I'm just saying that that's an exception to the rule.
Naturally, he was born like that, and there's nothing you can do to change.
He was born a pneumia sticker person. That's what I'm saying. Let me share with you a Maharal, okay, just to clear things up. There's a famous Gemara Nida, which you've all heard of in some way or another. I'm not sure if you're aware that it's a Gemara, that when a child is born, prior to the birth of a child, what is he doing in the mother's womb? So the Gemara says that the form of a child is like the form of a rolled-up scroll. The embryo is all scrunched up inside the mother's stomach, a rolled-up scroll. Because he's a scroll, because his purpose when he's in the mother's womb is to absorb Torah. Someone that absorbs Torah is compared to a scroll that you're writing things on it. He's not active, he's passive. He doesn't actively learn Torah, it's being spoon-fed. Sort of like here, you know, being spoon-fed. And he learns Kota, he has a Nerdolik al-Rashi, he's got a candle on his head, and he sees, he understands everything in the world from one end of the world to the other end of the world. I mean, the Gemara says he sees from one end of the world, but it means he understands everything, and the Malach is teaching it to him. And then when he's born, the Malach hits him on the mouth, and he forgets everything. That's the Gemara. Now, there's a Baba Meiser. It's the Zet, the whack, where the Malach knocks all the information out of his head. And that's the little indentation that people have under their nose, between the nose and their mouth. And that's not in the Gemara. That part is not in the Gemara. That's a Baba Meiser. And that's not the Pshat. That's not Jerry. That's not the Pshat. That is not the Pshat. The baby does not... No, that's a Jerry. The baby does not forget his Torah because he gets hit by a mallet so hard that it's buried his way around inside of him. The mallet is the kasha. Why does the mallet hit him? Why does he have to look at what does this mirror of Gemara mean? He has to get hit by a mallet and on the mouth, and he gets hit on the mouth. He forgets his Torah. You want to let someone's senses hit him in the brain. Why are you hitting him in the mouth? What is the hitting on the ear? They have that story about the child who was born without it, and he started saying Gemara Shetaisis. Well, the truth is, I heard it from someone that knew the kid. The child could still be alive, but he doesn't know it anymore.
The Belzerubba, some Rebbe
I heard it from Moshe Steinberg Shlita, and he saw the kid.
I didn't hear about this.
This is about over 40 years ago. There was a child that, when he was very young, he was able to say large amounts of Gemara, Rashi, and Tosis without ever having learned it. And then Moshe Steinberg said, but he didn't have any understanding of it. He was just saying the words. And then he got older, he forgot it all. He became a normal child.
He never had this thing? He doesn't have enough?
That part of the story about him missing the thing, that's part of the Baba Meiser. That's what it's called. You know, the fact that there was a child that he, at a very young age, he was able to say over Torah that he had never learned, So then I heard from Rabbi Sternbach, who actually knew the kid. But as far as the thing being missing, that's part of the legend, and I'm not, you know, there's no confirmation of it.
The kid's still alive.
What they do
to him? Years ago. He's been a kid.
Well, you know, he's probably still alive. I hope he's still alive.
40?
But I remember him.
Know that it's him.
I don't have any information on it. I remember the story when I was 7 years old. My Rebbe told it to us in school. That's around the time it happened.
I know, I remember the story about the fish. You
know
about that one?
This is a different story.
Yeah. That was in Houston.
This is a different story because this story is in Chazal, okay? That's it. When a story happens in this world that the Chazal talk about, then there's no problem with it. This is a Chazal. What Chazal say? The child knows called Terakula. So Maral explains, what's the hit? And he said that there's a difference between Pnimius and Chitzanius. There's a part of a person that's so precious, and so internal that it can never be expressed in words. You know, you can express what you like in words. You can express what you dislike in words. You can express an emotion. You can express a preference. You can express a concept in words. But you can't express yourself in words. You can express what you're thinking at a given moment in words. But your very being, you cannot. You know, what are you? Well, my name is... That's your name, but what are you? I'm Jewish. That okay, but what are you? Yeah, there's a lot of people that are Jewish. What are you? Well, I like vanilla ice cream. That's what you like, but what are you? He said, well, I can make a shot, you know, from the inside of the court. What? You can't express your essence in words.
That's what you said to Rosh for Yom Kippur. We use a shofar.
Very good. Beautiful, beautiful. That's excellent. And that's the sound of a shofar. It's a wordless expression of our essence. That's why we have to express our essence with the shofar blowing. Now, why is it that you can't express it in words? Let me ask you another question. Why is it the Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that had to give Torah over to the Bnei Yisrael of all the afflictions that he was afflicted with was he wasn't able to speak?
Ooh,
yes.
He was a really good
orator. That's a technical answer. That is said in the Mepharshim, but there is a deeper one. And I'd like to deal with the deeper one.
Wait, so
you're saying that the whole reason why Hashem made him an Eros Messiah with a lisp is so people shouldn't think that he convinced people. There's a reason which is more basic.
Wait.
Much more basic.
Just go back for a second. Is the part of the person that is so special it can't be expressed, their soul?
The essence. No, it's not just the soul, because a person is body and soul together. The soul is not the whole person. The soul is half the person. It's the essence. And the answer is because something that can be expressed in speech is something that can be brought to the outside. When you say something, so then everybody hears rights over what you say. You know, there's words. Before you say them, they're yours. Once you say them, then they belong to everyone else. And you lose control over them. It's like an email. Once you click it, it's gone. You can no longer retrieve it. In fact, Google now has this feature which you could turn on that you have like 60 seconds to take it back. It's ridiculous, but
3 minutes to get the page up.
Yeah, but I think they give you like 60 seconds you could take it back in case you send an email. Words that are expressed are public domain. Public domain means that anyone has access to them. Public domain means that they're superficial. Because something precious is something that's private. Something cheap is something that everyone has access to. Once you say something, you cheapen it. If someone tells you a secret, and only the two of you know it, you and him, you feel so privileged. You feel so close. You feel so trusted. And you guard the secret with your life. Because, it's deep. It's heavy. The minute you chas v'shalom reveal the secret, so now everybody knows it.
everybody.
Secrets should be secrets.
Secrets of Torah.
Did you ever tell somebody something, like you're revealing something to him, and you thought it was something of value, and he says, "Oh, I knew about that 2 years ago." What did he just do to your secret?
Makes you feel like an idiot.
But what did he do to the secret? He cheapened it. Right? He cheapened it. He made it worthless, valueless. The morale says, the Moshe Rabbeinu really did not live in this world. Moshe Rabbeinu, he might have been born to a flesh and blood father and mother, but his existence from the day of his birth was otherworldly. He was born with a bismillah. When he was born, the house filled with light. He was otherworldly. Moshe Rabbeinu was just like, he didn't live in this world. He didn't have to eat. People couldn't look directly at his face. The kedusha was coming from his face. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't belong in this superficial world where everything could be displayed and shown and seen. The things that Moshe Rabbeinu knew were precious. They were internal. They were primitive. So he didn't have a power of speech. Or his power of speech was limited. Because he couldn't express the things that he had. The things that he had were not given to expression. They were too deep. You can't put it into words.
So it's not a literal list. That's a metaphor.
It's not a literal. It's much deeper. It could be also, there's a concept called Ein Mikra Yetzim Yidei Pshutai. That means he had a literal list, but that's not the umpkus of it. The depth of the literal lips was because he could not express it. So it manifests itself in two ways, in the literal manner and in a deeper manner. He was able to, it just for him was difficult. He had to overcome something. He did. He did give over the Torah to Klal Yisrael. No, he gave it to all the Klal Yisrael. Eventually there was a system where he made people that went in between them, but the hard cases came to him. In the beginning he taught everyone, we both got iron. But anyway, he had to overcome something. There was a challenge to overcome. Because to take things which are so primi and take them and find... Where do you find the words to express the things which he's thinking? A child, when he's in the mother's stomach, he's learning Kol Torah Kula. He's learning things that... The Torah he's learning cannot be expressed in this world. He's learning Torah in a totally different way. When we learn the Torah here, we're not learning the Torah the same way we learned it in our mother's stomach. He's not learning it in an external fashion, that there's a cow, and he bumps into a bull, and then the cow is in miscarriage, and then the owner says, "Oh, poor Elsie, yeah, he lost the baby," and they're arguing about, you know, with the miscarriage before it got bumped. He's not learning it like that. There's no cows in the womb. It's conceptual. It's kedusha. It means something. It's not related to you know, events that could happen and you can affect things. He's learning it that way. It's important for him to learn it that way because he's in that world. He's in the world of the neshama. When he's born, he's considering the olam ha-maaser. This is the world of the here and now. It's the world where when you punch against the wall, your hand hurts. It's you know, right. Or the wall hurts. This is the world where he has to learn the Torah externally as well. That's also important. It is important to learn the halakhas, that you take the Torah with your right hand, your physical right hand, and you put it on your physical left hand, and you tie it around in an exact fashion, physically. And that's the way you perfect the word. And you take your hand in your pocket, and you take out a coin and you give it to tzedakah. And you take your foot and you stick a Russia's head under the water so it doesn't come off. This is, you know, physical. Physical. I mean, Bismarck said we can't do it. I'm talking about the time of Chazal. Physical, you can't do it. You can't do it. So you need to be able to express it. We need to take the Torah and it has to be revealed in an external fashion. It's lower in the Torah, but we're saying the Torah exists everywhere, even in this world. These holy words of Torah, they're written in black fire on top of white fire, and existed 2,000 generations before it was given. They can actually mean, you know, wake up out of your comfortable bed. put on your clothes, the right arm for the right sleeve first, and then the left arm lifting. There's halachas about how to go to the bathroom. The same Torah, it's a shleimus. So we're investing with the power of speech. Until you're born, you don't need the power of speech. Because there's nothing to bring out. Everything is inside. When you're born, then the job is to, everything should be out in the open, should be seen.
Well, how do you learn the Torah in the womb if you can't understand speech?
It's not speech, it's thought.
So it's thought. When I was in my mother's womb, I was just thinking.
That's
about,
right. Understanding. It's understanding. The Maral says that when the Malach hits the baby on the mouth, it's not to give him a little invitation, but he's investing him with the power of speech. Remember there was a medrash that every single blade of grass has a Malach that hits it and says grow?
Yeah.
Hitting in Chazal means you have to, there's no other option. When the Chazal say that the Malach hits, it doesn't mean that the Malach physically whacks the kid in the mouth. When Chazal says the Malach hits, it means in all places this is true. That Hashem is a Malach that doesn't give the person any option. This is must be. In order for creation to exist, in order for creation to attain perfection, so then Torah has to come into this world through speech also. It must be. So whacking on the mouth means that the child is forced to speak. Once a child is forced to speak, so all the Torah that he learned in his mother's womb, he can't relate to that anymore. Because that's a Torah that can't be spoken. So that leaves him. That's the Maral. Premius, Kitsonius.
Is there a reason why a baby can't speak?
What?
Is there a reason why a baby, like, at first, like, doesn't just, like, isn't born, like, talking?
Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu determined that everything in this world has to go in stages. That's the reason why. This world is that people are born, you know, the Medrash says, why aren't people born with a bris milah? Hashem wants us to get a bris milah, so let Hashem, Hashem wants us to grow. They grow in stages. Now babies, when they grow, they're not responsible for their own growth. Yeah, you know, but Hashem, you know, everything has to be gradually with the development. And we constantly grow. The baby inside of us is always there. Because when you mature, then the baby you were last year is matured and grown into a person. And life is constantly getting rid of the old baby and becoming the new adult. Hashem wants that. Hashem does want that. This is, this is Yisrael Pnimius. The baby's in the mother's womb. And Hashem gives the baby the Kriya Chadiba. Well, it says tomorrow, you'll find that Kadosh Baruch Hu is gazer on certain babies that come into this world, that they don't have the ability of taking what's inside of them and then bringing it outside of them. So if they don't have the power of speech or communication or the ability of linking up with the surroundings, that's because for some reason, this is in God's wisdom, these babies have a connection with the Olam Pnimius. That's Shalei K'derech HaTeva. That's Lamala M'derech HaTeva. It's Rosh Lamala M'derech HaTeva. But someone that's born because he's limited intellectually, that's very hard for him to assimilate knowledge, so it's not the same thing. That's someone that he has limits. That's B'derech HaTeva. It is B'derech HaTeva for some people to be smarter than others. And a Gentile who has that, he's afflicted for the rest of his life, and he can only accomplish within the confines of those barriers. But a Jewish person, the Gemara says, Yesh Mazel Yisrael and Mazel Yisrael. He lives between the world of Mazel and the world of above Mazel, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu created the Mazel. Kadosh Baruch Hu is above the Mazel. And if a Jew's reality is that the Mazel itself has limitations, because the Mazel was created by Hashem, and the Mazel could dictate one thing, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu could be revapolit. And a Jew forges a direct relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and a Jew doesn't recognize limitations, and the Jew says, Foo to the limitations. The Kadosh Baruch Hu can do anything. So then he breaks out of the mazel. So yesh mazel yisrael and mazel yisrael. It's all depending on where your emunah takes you. And it does involve a moon and the belief of something which you can't see with your eyes. It's my mission. Ba'amna mishpate hashpah hazosha kecham gam him igbalim. Delimited. Kfimasha gaza chakma yoyena yeshen noyes. Because if you know the chakmas hakechavim, I mean, this is amazing that if you know, if you could understand, if you could read the stars, so you know the configurations of the stars, that they're constantly changing according to the time of the week, you know, day, the day. So you can read in the star things. You can read the stars. The stars are a book. The stars themselves are a scroll. It's like a sefer. You can read them. Some people, they do understand the derech, the pathways of the stars. The stargazers. Okay, local amitas derelmas gals bazer. But a Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't reveal everything. It's, you know, the ability of people to gaze into the stars is limited. It's hidden. It's hidden. They can know generalities, but it's hidden. Okay, now yesigo achayzer kamel tzas men yerem asidim. They can even know the future. You could see the future based on stargazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could predict, you know, the future orbits. Of, you know, we have this down to a science now. You could predict based on, you know, patterns what's going to be. There were predictions throughout history. There's predictions of Nostradamus, which a lot of them came true. They predicted what certain comets are going to come by and natural disasters. And this is not prophecy. It's completely b'derech ha-teva, but it's not complete. There's a chazal that even if they do see something, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come true because it can become nullified. And the chazal give us examples to this. There was a lady by the name of Aishas Potiphar, Mrs. Potiphar. You heard her? Mrs. Potiphar, she was a married woman. And she coveted. Yosef Potiphar coveted
Yosef.
Your slave Yosef. And she did everything under her power to bond with Yosef in a permissible fashion, a forbidden fashion. It made no difference to her. Chazal revealed to us why she did it. It was not a pure physical lust. She was a stargazer. And she saw that she's going to have a destiny for Yosef. And she was right. But she saw and she didn't see. She saw that her destiny is going to be through Yosef, eternal, eternity. But she thought it was through herself personally. And it wasn't, it was through her daughter. Because the daughter of Aishas Potiphar, her name was Asnas. And Asnas was the bride, the future bride of Yosef HaTzadik. So she was right, but she wasn't right. So how do we understand that? She was a stargazer. She was able to see the constellations that were aligned at the time of her birth. She was able to see the stars that were aligned at the time of Yosef's birth. And she was able to see that these two constellations had to join with one another. That is true. Because her daughter is a part of her. Her daughter is an extension of her. And the constellations were aligned with one another, and they are supposed to join. She saw a general picture. She didn't see the pratim. She didn't see the breakdown. She didn't see it, you know, she didn't see past herself. Because she can't. You can only see generalities. You can't see the small particles. Why? Because seeing in the stars is derech ha-teva. Derech ha-teva is the power of nature. And the power of nature, there is a limit nature has limits. There's a limit to the microscopic organisms that the human eye could see. And you look at something, you have good eyesight. You just went through a circus. I happen to have a challenge. I discovered this in seeing, seeing things close up. You get to a certain age, your eyes get worse. And you want to pick out an estrogen. And one of the things that you guard against when picking out an estrogen, you have to be constant alert, is that there shouldn't be any black dots that are actually part of the skin. I mean, there's black dots you could just wipe off, with a Q-tip or something, but they're actually part of the skin because there's a lot of thorns in the ester tree, and when a thorn pokes an ester egg, and then it leaves the ester egg, so then the skin of the ester reacts with a black discoloration. And a small small, teeny, teeny, weeny little point. So if you see a black dot that's actually part of the skin, it might have been a hole that was made by a thorn, and then it was sealed up and it turned black, which is not a problem. But when the thorn came out, it might have taken a little bit of the peel with it, and that is a problem. So it's called suffocusser. Okay, suffocusser, and that's why, but these things are very small. Now you look at it, and if you see that dot, don't buy the asterisk. And the cleaner it is, the more expensive it is. If it's a green dot, it's fine. If it's a brown dot, it's fine. The other people that they're looking at a dragon until they see spots up under their eyes, and then the dots, it's like you're looking at it, you try to focus on it, and then the dot appears, and then it disappears. And the lucky is if you can't see it, then it's not there. You hold the asterisk the way you don't have to hold it up to your eyeball. You hold the asterisk the way you normally hold an object, and you look. If you don't see it, it's not there. Certain particles you can't see with the naked eye. You have then the people that have these magnifying glasses, I don't know if you see them, and they use it. The truth is, I look at a mice, if something could only be seen with a magnifying glass, and not with the naked eye, it doesn't make it possible. But they're using the magnifying glass to tell the color, usually. They could see with the naked eye, but they can't see the color using it. And then you have things you can only see with a microscope. And the particles are so small, you can see cells with a microscope. There's something that's atomic particles you can't see with a microscope. You can only see with an electron microscope. At some point, you're not going to be able to see the particles anymore. Because we're limited. Because Barker gave us a limit to what we can see, what we can't see. It's too far away, you can't see it. So you're trying to see the stars. You're trying to see the pattern of the stars. In order to see the particulars that it's your daughter or not you, you have to be able to see without limit. And you can't. It's dark or teva. So you see general things in the stars. You can't see any specifics. Prophecy? What about Nebuah, on the other hand? Nebuah is not physical sight. Nebuah is when a person works on his body enough that his body is not on a physical level anymore. I mean, the B'nai Nevi'im, that they brought their body up to the level of their soul, and they waited for Kadosh Baruch Hu to speak to them, because someone that his body is body, it's physical. Hashem doesn't speak to people like that. Hashem speaks to bodies that are like souls. And then Hashem reveals the truth to them. It makes no difference whether it's general or if it's specific or if it's minute, because something that's not bound by the laws of nature has no limits. If someone is empowered with sight, with a miracle, does it make a difference if the miracle enables them to see something which is 100 yards away or 100 miles away? Is there a difference in the miracle level? Once he's bypassing or breaking through the limits of human sight, so then there's no difference. The nation is that he could see anything. Is there a difference in a mile or 1,000 miles? It doesn't take a greater nace. Once it's a mile and a half of time, he could see everything. It's right, So that's what he's saying. The crazy could call them. They do see, but they don't see. The second thing he says is, even if they do see something, but Hashem could nullify it. And this is what happened to Haman. And this is what happened to Avraham Avinu. Haman saw that he could destroy the Jewish people in Adar. He was right. But he didn't see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu overturned it, because it's also Tamala Medaka Teva. To overturn nature is above Teva. You can't see that. You can't see above nature. So they can be wrong in two ways. They can be wrong because they see things vaguely, and they can be wrong because things can be overturned. Hashem decides that it's not going to be the way according to nature dictates. You can always tell it. Not to, what? And day and week, yeah, right. So then the natural forces could either be for them or against them, or it could be a mix.
Right.
Not anymore. Other has been fixed in this history from the time of Haman that the Mazel has overturned the Taiva. The look is that if somebody has a court case with a Gentile, he's supposed to schedule it during Adar. If somebody has a court case with a Gentile of, he's supposed to push it off. It's a look on the mindset. It's not of is yeah, don't have it's not a good month to have to be judged. Judged. The look is that it does not dictate when a person should be born. It,
when a person's born, can a person be born like you just said, a person's born at a certain time and he's not smart.
Right, so the Gemara goes to, like the Gemara goes to, the Gemara on Shabbos goes to the different personality types. But a Jewish person is not fixed.
I think he's born with that personality, but he has the option if he wants to.
If he lives, he fights against nature. There are two types of people in this world. Do they make peace with nature? Okay, this is the way I am. I'm going to make the best I can do with what I am. And there are those that they don't recognize any limits. Someone that doesn't recognize limits could break out of the limits. Someone that's at peace with the limits will be constrained. I mean, I'll tell you a Gemara, which this will wrap things up. There's a Gemara said Hedgen about this Giel HaMelech. Hezekiah Melech was the biggest tzaddik that ever lived. But Kadosh Baruch Hu, he was one of the potential Mashiachs. Hashem wanted him to be the Mashiach. To redeem the world, the Jewish people, and the Beis HaMikdash would have lasted forever. He wouldn't have needed a third Beis HaMikdash. We would have had the second Beis HaMikdash forever. Hezekiah was one of the greatest men that ever lived. And he separated from his wife. Because he saw with the Ruach HaKodesh. So, yeah, Ruach HaKodesh is, it's not stargazing, Ruach HaKodesh is like prophecy. Ruach HaKodesh is prophecy, and he saw that his son, he's going to give birth to a son named Menashe, who's going to be the biggest Russia that ever lived. And he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to bring Menashe into the world, so he separated from his wife. And Hashem sent Yeshaya Navi, the Navi Yeshaya, to the king Hezekiah with a message. He told Hezekiah, you're going to die. He said, why am I going to die? He said, because, you know, the deep secret of bringing children to this world is Hashem's domain. And you're meddling in Hashem's domain. And you don't belong there. You're a mitzvah to have children. The challenge that the child is going to face is destiny. That's the deepest secrets. No, he said, it's not your realm, it's not your world. You have no right to separate from your wife to prevent the birth of a child, because it's broken. It's his domain. This is not something Hashem gives over to people. Hashem gives over to people to biologically have a child, to conceive a child, to raise a child. But what challenges that child is going to have, and what odds is going to have to surmount, that's kapshid rachmanon, that's the deepest secrets of all mankind. You don't believe you're going to die. The Raisa, Hezekiah returned to his wife, and he had the child, and the child fulfilled his wildest nightmares. And the Menashe was a mass murderer on the scale of genocide, and the depths of depravity and Avodah Zarah that he reached were unparalleled. It was, at the end of Menashe's life, he was captured by a neighboring king, who was thrown into a pit and left to die. And that's when he the saying, there's no atheist in the foxhole. So that's when Menashe discovered he finally, he had a hisarius for tshuva on his own. He had his own. It was self-generated to reach out to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem has angels. And these angels, that their job is to take someone's tshuva and to bring it in front of the Kisei HaKavod. To assist in the tshuva process. Because it takes, you need help to do tshuva. You need help. You know, a person could have a thought, you could have remorse for a moment, and then I live my life this way, I'll keep it. You need help for your tshuva to come out. And it's malachim. A person wants the tshuva, Hashem has malachim, that their job is to help the person with the tshuva. And we need it. And the malachim, they're in charge of tshuva, they would not help a nasha. They told Hashem, that's not our job. Our job is not to help people like that. He went beyond the point of no return. What he did, he put himself past the point of no return. And our job is not to help people like that. And they were right. So Hashem said to the Malachim, you're right, Hashem will help. And Hashem created a new form of tshuva. He created a form of tshuva for someone that went beyond the point of no return. You can't even understand such a thing. It is, he went beyond the point of no return. He's totally, totally corrupted. There's nothing left. So Hashem said he's going to create a tshuva just for him. And he dug out a place under his kisei kavod. And Menashe's tshuva was accepted. So this kasha was asked by my Rebbe. Rabbi Isaac Uzband, Shlita, he's the Rosh Hashiva and tells, you should live and be well and have a full Shlema. Rosh Hashiva and tells. He said, Chizkiyo, Henry Rechon Kodesh, he was able to see that he's going to have a son that's in Russia. So he's still in the future, and he's separated from his wife. And he put his life on the line for that. He was Chayiv Misa for such a thing. He had Rechon Kodesh, why didn't he see the future all the way to the end, and his son is going to do tshuva? Kasha? He said, because some things are so deep that you can't see them with the Ruach HaKodesh. Even in the world of above nature. Well, so with stargazing you could see nature. With the Ruach HaKodesh you could see above nature. But Menashe Tshuva was above that.
It's above that.
That means there's no rules to it. The Malam Rideach HaTeva also has rules.
It does?
And guidelines. Yeah, there are certain laws. Malachim has certain guidelines.
That's what they are. They are guidelines.
Right, but it's fixed guidelines. It's not natural guidelines.
There's nothing. That's
above
God.
That is a Kodesh Baruch Hu, right?
That's God. There's nothing.
You can't see that. So there's three levels of Baisai. There's Olam Hazeh, physical world, which is imprisoned by nature. Let's not fool ourselves. If someone says, I'm going to fly now, it won't happen. They had these costumes, Superman costumes in the 1950s and 60s, that the kids would buy them. They'd see on TV Superman fly, jumping out a window and flying. Clark Kent changing into the Superman costume. And so they thought, they change into a Superman costume, you can fly. So they bought a Superman costume, they put it on, they jumped out windows.
Holy cow.
So there's such a thing called product liability. So they printed on, my guy had it. They printed on in yellow letters, this costume is only a toy, it does not enable the wearer to fly. They have to protect themselves. You can't fly. In Olam Hazeh, you can't fly.
And what's better, flying?
In the Olam of the Neshamas, you're never on the ground. That's also rules. It's a rule.
So what's better, flying at Olam Haba or flying at Olam Hazeh, being a physical being?
Why does one have to be better than the other?
Because one is more cherished than the other. Because one, you're forced to, you don't have a choice, so what do you do?
I don't know.
Which is more cherished?
It really depends on how you're defining flying. Because all flying means that you're further away from Gashmias. That's what flying means.
No, in like the times of Beis HaMikdash. They could fly in Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah,
Yeshka wrote it on his arm and he flew out.
Yes, I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that tradition that they flew, and Bilam flew and Pinchas flew. It doesn't relate to better. But if Pinchas was able to fly, so flight means to be able to put a separation between you and the ground. So that means that Pinchas is able to relate to the Olam, which is above nature, because in the Olam above nature, there is no ground. So if you're in this world, and you're able to relate to the world, which is, there is no ground, that means you're able to put yourself in a place where you don't relate to ground, so then the ground has no hold over you. So that means for that moment, he was able to rise to the level of a Ruchni, someone that the physical restraints don't hold him back. Because in the Olam of the Neshamas, the physical restraints don't hold us back. So it means he lived in that world, even though his body was in this world, and there was no restraint on him. That's the pshat. It could also be done with Kirkus and Tumma, because the Kaddish Baruch created everything with their point and counterpoint. So if a Kaddish has the ability of taking his body and bringing it up to a level of something which is Rukhi, so then a Tamei could take the body and bring it down to the level where the Ratzon of the person, Kirkus and Tumma is a person is like self-worship, that he's his own God, where the Ratzon of the person could defy the laws that God put in nature. It's sort of a halakha, it's a long topic. So that's why the Chayzim B'Kechavim, they're very limited. They do see things, and they could see things with truth, but it's going to be limited to their stargazing eyesight, so they won't see the particulars, they'll only see the generalities. And once it's Ruach HaKodesh, we'll see the particulars, but they'll only see the particulars that are revealed to people in the Olam HaYeinim, and then there's a world above the Olam HaYeinim, which is God Himself, where everything is possible. And there's no rules at all. So that's Pshat in the Gemara. Yesh Mazli Yisrael, Ein Mazli Yisrael. Okay, hard topic. It's not a topic. It's a very hard topic.